Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Used to be. You make me hard with the wounds that I had to lick. You can pick on me and I can see it at a click. You're a racist, I wouldn't trust you one bit. I'm a sinner. Never said anything else.
Take it, and you know that I'm a The spotlight can shine brilliantly, or it can leave you overexposed. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, what new albums from M.I.A. and Liz Phair have to say about fame. And later, soprano Angela Mead talks about tackling the title role in the Bellini opera Norma, and she'll sing Norma's famous aria live in our studio. But to begin, the rapper M.I.A. made news a few weeks ago with her response to an unflattering profile published in the New York Times. On her website, she lashed out at the writer, Lynn Hirschberg, posting this song called I'm a Singer, and sending her fans Hirschberg's cell phone number via Twitter. This week, M.I.A. is set to release her third album. It's called Maya. And today we'll look at how M.I.A. and another artist with a new album, Liz Phair, are dealing with the glare of the spotlight on their music. Joining us in the studio is Pitchfork columnist Nitza Ubaba. And joining us by phone is Los Angeles Times pop critic Ann Powers. Nitza and Ann, to the two of you, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, happy to be here. Hi.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with the M.I.A. album. It's called Maya. It's due out tomorrow. You've both heard it. And ladies first, what do you think?
Well, I'm a huge fan of M.I.A., and I think what she's doing is very important in lots of ways. I feel like this work is a transitional work for her, where she's figuring a lot of things out for herself. And there are some tracks that are really, you know, they're totally grab you, and others are a bit, they're over full, they're a little inaccessible. So it's not the perfect MI album, but I still think it's a very important one, and what she's grappling with is hugely important, which is how to be in the pop world and still be, you know, do radical politics and be who she is. And she's really facing up to that now, I think, with this record.
Nitza, her two previous albums, Arular in 2005, Kala in 2007, were you fans of those records?
Oh, absolutely. I thought they were two of the, you know, some of the best albums of the decade.
Now, what about this new one?
I would agree with the transitional work characterization. I think it's maybe a little unfortunate that she would be doing a transitional work at a moment where the spotlight is really on her and there are high expectations, and she's just come to a lot of people's attention off of a single from the last album. So I think this one will disappoint some people who have enjoyed her music.
Because there's no paper planes on this or for other reasons?
You know, it's not just a matter of there not being the same kind of single. I mean, I think it attempts a lot of interesting things, but a lot of them just don't work as much. And there's also a weird kind of joylessness to it, I think. The previous album sort of sparked in this way that this one does not immediately have that spark, and I think that's going to be a problem.
And is she trying to do too many things on this record? I mean, as we begin to hear tracks, I mean, there are things that are, it seems like she's aiming for mainstream pop on at least a couple of songs on the record.
Right. Well, actually, I think joylessness is an interesting comment. I think what's happening is that with her last two records, she was building a voice that sort of represented the world, you know, especially Kala, her last record. She was almost speaking for a global figure, you know, like this global, Jessica Hopper, the critic, called her Robin Hood Rat. So she's kind of like, you know, the global street urchin rising up and demanding attention. And it was so invigorating. This record, I feel, is, to use a cliche, more personal. It's called Maya. It's about her, you know? It's about her as an individual, as a woman, as a mother, as a lover, and as a potential pop star. And think the introspection is what I'm hearing. To me, it sounds kind of like the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs. It has that similar sense of, like, Karen O, the singer for that band, who you know, is a great rock star and yet is always seems ambivalent about that role, which I think is a reasonable way to be for a young woman who has, you know, politics, to recognize the problems of being a pop star as well as trying to be one.
All right. I want to get back to the whole question of politics, because that's something that you've both written about. But first, here is a clip from the forthcoming MIA record. It's called Maya, which is her given name. And this song is called XXXO.
You know, I can be the actress, you'd be Tarantino.
The song is called XXXO from the new MIA album out tomorrow called Maya. It's actually spelled with a series of slashes, so you have to kind of squint at it before it comes into focus as a name. But the recurring line here, Ann Powers, you want me to be somebody I'm really not. I mean, when we get to the right. Liz Phair album in a moment as well, she too seems to be dealing with this, you know, the whole question of, what is the role of fame? What is the role of the musician who has that spotlight and still wants to have a family and a life? You know,
right. It's, well, I do have something to say about that, of course. Can I just jump in?
Sure.
I think the key line in that song is actually the line where she says, I'll be that actress, you be Tarantino.
Uh-huh.
In other words, she recognizes that producer, this song is not about a love interest. It's about a producer, someone who's going to make a song with her. And she recognizes that her male producers, she works with male producers, want to put her into a role, and that, you know, her record company wants to put her into a role. And it's interesting that she chooses Tarantino, because Tarantino is a director who's known for presenting very strong women, you know, very strong female action heroines in his movies, but at the same time, they're kind of exploitative, you know. I mean, Uma Thurman is his muse, and she is incredibly strong in his movies, but also she's constantly victimized, and she's, you know, often in tight or ripped clothing, and, you know, I mean, there's definitely questions about his attitude about women. So I think this is a great example of Maya trying to figure out what it is she's getting herself into, what jams, what kind of, you know, how can she be the action hero in her own music and her own songs?
Anissa, the idea of MIA with that spotlight on her, you know, that spotlight is casting a very harsh glare right now because of the recent dust-up with the New York Times. What do you make of that?
It is. I want to jump back for 1 second, though, and say about XXXO, because I do agree with Anne there, but I think part of what you wind up with is this thing that happens frequently where an artist who's expected to maybe be pop will take a stab at a pop song and yet make it conflicted about mm-hmm, doing pop. Mm-hmm. And you wind up
You want me to be somebody I'm really not.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing that sort of hops out. And I always sort of question that. It seems like a fairly easy path to take. It's like either don't be it or be it, rather than sort of I'm being it, but I'm conflicted about it. I don't really know how much.
For a moment there, you sounded like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Don't dream it, be it.
Although, I mean, come on, let's be honest. If you know, if someone came to you and said, hey, you know, you could have a hit single and make a lot of money and be successful and live a glamorous life, you wouldn't feel conflicted or tempted by that, even if you were? I mean, would you necessarily say, oh no, I'm sticking with the brown rice today. Take that foie gras away.
I absolutely don't mean it in monetary terms. I just mean in terms of making a single. There is this sort of traditional thing of sort of, this is my stab at a pop single, but for the record, I'm conflicted about having taken that stab. And you kind of, yeah.
So,
yeah, I don't mean that as a criticism, because I think that song, it works okay for what it's for.
She wants to have her cake and eat it, too, seems to be what you're getting at here.
Well, yeah.
And as long as we're talking about food, let's talk truffles. Let's talk Trufflegate, because this is the New York Times thing.
Yeah, I absolutely did not mean to distract from that. That's been... Really, one of the great fun, if you follow music journalism or music writing, been one of the great fun things of the year. That there's a piece in the New York Times Magazine by Lynn Hirschberg who
cover
went on
piece.
And did, yes, a whole profile with the phrase "radical chic" on the cover, which seems important. Painted an unflattering portrait of MIA as kind of. Having radical chic on the cover is probably a good summary of where it was coming from, insinuating that she was maybe unserious or would sound in certain places like a Stone College freshman talking about radical politics or something like that. It had an agenda going in. It was portraying MIA the way that Hirschberg saw her or wanted to present her. MIA's responses to it were, of course, interesting. As you said, she put Hirschberg's phone number on Twitter and released an audio recording. Well, let me back up for a second.
the song we heard, "I'm a Singer." You know, I didn't lie to you. You're thinking of somebody else. You're a racist. I wouldn't trust you. I mean, these are the lyrics from the song that she
posted.
Yeah, and she also posted, unedited portions of their interview.
Which she recorded herself as well. Yeah.
Yeah, which sort of put things in a different light.
Which actually showed that Hirschberg, the famous truffle fries that MIA ate were kind of, I wouldn't say forced upon her, but she was definitely encouraged to order them by the reporter.
Yeah, exactly. Hirschberg suggested that they should buy some truffle fries on the Times' dollar. Then this detail shows up in the piece saying, you know, I can't remember what the line was. MIA saying something like,
I want to be an outsider. Yeah,
while eating a truffle fry.
Also, I'm sorry, but biggest cliche of feature writing, and I expect more from Lynn Hirschberg, who writes great features, to talk about what some eating during an interview. I mean, come on. Nim Yunovich parodied that in a magazine piece 10 years ago. I can't believe it still resonates, you know?
Well,
corny.
The Times ended up publishing, if not a correction or retraction, something along the lines, you know, where they had to basically say, yeah, you know, she wasn't misquoted, but the sentences were taken out of context and the order was reversed. So,
yeah.
Right.
Well, I think because she, MIA had posted sort of the original audio, we got sort of a how the sausage is made look at a feature,
yes.
And they had to clarify how things are done.
All right, Soundcheck listeners, we're talking about two musical provocateurs. Actually, we're talking about one so far, but Liz Phair still to come. MIA's new album's out tomorrow. It's called Maya. She's been in the news because of this New York Times article that Lynn Hirschberg wrote for the magazine. And we want to know what you think. Did MIA's recent feud with the New York Times over that profile change your opinion of her? What do you think of the new record, what you've heard of it? You can call us at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Both MIA and Liz Phair dealing with the spotlight, dealing with the subject of fame and what it does to you and the restrictions it puts on you artistically. Does that make for good songwriting? 212-433-9692, 433-WNYC. Speaking of the songwriting, let's hear a little more from the new MIA record. This is called Tequila.
Yeah.
called Tequila, spelled K-I-L-L-A, from the new Maya, the new MIA record called Maya. And we're speaking with Ann Powers, pop music critic of the L.A. Times, and Nisa Ababa, music writer and columnist for Pitchfork. And you like this track, Nisa.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ones that there's a good percentage of this album that is dedicated to kind of being a little bit more grating and harsh than she's been in the past. And that's one where I think that it works sonically and musically. That track has a nice grind to it.
Now, what about the politics question? I mean, she has been accused of being somewhat unfocused, you know, somewhat sloppy in her political thinking. Is this really important in a singer-songwriter, that her politics be as precise as her pitch, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily, to me, it's not of huge import. But, I mean, that's one of the things, actually. Everybody sort of concentrated on these truffle fries in the Hirschberg piece. But, you know, probably what was more, what wanted to be more damning in that piece was that she got quotes from authorities on Sri Lankan politics saying, you know, some of the things that MIA says about the situation there are unhelpful and inflammatory and, you know, are not making things better. At the same time, you know, she is a pop star of sorts. She doesn't really claim to be an expert on politics. She sort of acts these things out more than she makes statements about, you know, this is what needs to be done policy-wise. Mm-hmm. I think the issue is, you know, it sort of works so long as it's productive of good music. And when she brings these issues into her music, and sometimes they spark and really resonate. And I think on certain levels, there are certain ways that on this album it doesn't spark as well as it did on previous ones.
And do you agree?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think this idea or this pattern of questioning the politics of a pop star, we can trace that back to Bob Dylan. It happened to him. John Lennon, Joe Strummer from The Clash, who's someone that I think Rob Sheffield in Rolling Stone compared MIA to. This is a constant thing. Even when you look at women pop stars of the last couple of decades, you know, Courtney Love, is she a feminist? You know, that kind of thing. And Liz Phair, we're going to talk about, you know, her politics. This, as Nitza said, like, pop music is not policy, you know. I mean, she's not Joe Biden. She's not in the Senate either. You know, she's making music. And in a sense, I hate to say this as a journalist, but I almost wish that, you know, we didn't exist to expose the silly things that people like this say during interviews, because it does cause fans, listeners, to question the truth or the power of the music. And I just want to go back to the music. Like, MIA is one of the pop stars I have never actually interviewed. And after this whole thing, it's not like I really want to sit down with her. I don't care. I mean, I like the power of her music, which goes beyond her words. Let's point that out, too. Not only is it about what the music sounds like, it's about the tone of her voice. It's about the way she makes her statements. It's not just about the words on paper. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge difference between art and politics, and it's also a huge difference between music particularly and other arts. I'm not even going to hold her to the same standard I might hold, like, you know, Bertolt Brecht or you know, a political playwright or something like that. It's a totally different game. So I think we need to judge her stringently by the rules of pop music.
All right, and whether those rules of pop music are stringent rules or not is an open question. But let's take a quick break, and when we return, we want to continue to talk about the new MIA record. We also want to hear about how MIA may have influenced a bizarre new album from the rocker Liz Phair, which we'll also hear, and we'll take your calls and comments. You can go to the soundcheck page at WNYC.org or call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And a very different female voice coming up later in the program. Soprano Angela Mead sings live in our studio later on Soundcheck.
Thank you. Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
For a pair of noted musical agitators, neither Liz Phair nor MIA has made an album that sounds all that provocative. Maybe they're hoping tweaking the music press's collective nose is provocation enough.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We've been talking so far about the rapper MIA and her new album out tomorrow, but she's not the only provocative female singer-songwriter with a new record. Liz Phair, whose You Hate It you're hearing in the background, also has a new record, and there are some surprising connections between the Sri Lankan-born rapper and the guitarist rocker, which we can get to in a moment. We're also speaking with Pitchfork columnist Nissa Abeba and L.A. Times pop music critic Ann Powers, who's with us on the line. And in leaving the MIA story before the break, we were talking about her feud with the New York Times. And just a couple of quick listener responses. John from Brooklyn writes, "I think the way she handled the New York Times article was over the top." And we have Paisley on the line. She is also with us from Brooklyn. Paisley, what do you think about this whole dust-up with MIA?
When MIA first came on the scene, I really, really admired her. I thought it was great that there was a woman of color and a voice for developing countries that was on the independent music scene.
Right.
But her article in the New York Times really did kind of disturb me. I don't want to overstate the case, but it was disturbing not because of the truffle fries. I didn't know truffles were so loaded politically, but that detail actually escaped me. But I was more concerned about her comments about Lady Gaga not being attractive enough, and sort of a competitiveness with other women who are on the scene, and. Yeah, her comments about politics and Americans actually seemed really ignorant and just kind of small-minded and not very well informed. And I hold everyone, including people who walk down the street, to be accountable for what they say and to be educated about the things that they are speaking for. And so I don't care if she's a pop star, I don't care if she's a professor, I don't care if she's just some kid in a cafe, but if you're going to speak, then you should be, better informed. But I will say that I don't know for sure if her, comments were taken out of context by Lynn Hershberger.
Right. Well, now that becomes a question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. The number is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And, as Paisley just said, Nissa, there's lots of other stuff in that portrait of yeah. MIA. And Ann, you can respond to this, too. But, disparaging remarks about Lady Gaga, the Born Free video, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I just want to—oh, sorry. Go ahead, Nissa.
Okay, just real quick. Ann was saying something before about sort of separating art from the art from the politics. And I think actually MIA would be one of the first people to tell you that that's not possible, that her existence is political in certain ways, being Tamil, being Sri Lankan, doing the things that she does. That there is a political element to that to begin with, and that's part of what animates her records and what she does. And I think it sort of neuters art to say that considering the political implications is completely separate from the art.
That's not what I was saying.
I may have misunderstood you. But
I'm saying separating what she says in an interview from what she says in her music. Obviously, her music is political. Obviously, her existence is political. Her clothes are political. Her, the fact she has the female MC on stage with her is political.
I'm not, no. It's
what
just
about,
particularly interviews, well, particularly interviews, which, as you and I both know, are highly artificial situations in which people often say really ridiculous things, and it depends on which kind of journalist you are, frankly. If you are going to gravitate toward highlighting the most ridiculous thing versus trying to perhaps paint a more empathetic picture. And Lynn Hirschberg is a dangerous person to wrestle with. She is going to get your weakness, and that's her strength, and that's why people like her, and that's why she's a very powerful journalist. But, you know, I don't think that makes MIA's music any less political or any less, you know, important or serious.
Absolutely.
However, I'm mad at her for dissing Lady Gaga.
Well,
I don't think she should have done that.
Part of what I was going to say is that for certain realms of pop, doing things like interviews or the clothes you're wearing, those are extra musical things that are part of the pop package that you're creating. And I think, this is something I wrote about before, that I think a lot of people's responses to the Times piece weren't necessarily saying that they had judged her to be wrong about something politically substantive, like a policy issue. It was really sort of a pop problem that they were looking at her and saying, when she talks about politics, she seems uncool. She seems, you know, she doesn't seem confident or savvy, and that's a bad thing for a pop star because it's uncool.
All right, we're talking about MIA, and this is going to seem like a fairly bizarre segue, although it might work audio-wise. This is from the new album by Liz Phair. I alluded before to connections between the two. See what you make of this song called Bollywood.
I was tripping looking at my portfolio, wondering how I was gonna make enough dough, you know. Caught up a friend who wrote for One Tree Hill in Jericho. He had a job for me, a check it with a four-letter company. Position for ya. How about you let me keep my profits as a scorer? Record says I'm shrinking, now I'm getting poorer. I got a kid to feed. How about you cut a deal with me?
Hello, Liz. We see you as a commodity. We've been with you since day one, and that's an oddity.
And after a series of phone calls with the great publishing houses of Ursa Minor, I reached my representative who pulled out the
contract
from the file cabinet in the form of tablets made of stone. Then he said,
let me see your tail in my folder. Oh, you're 20 years older. Still hot, but getting a lot colder. And you wanna go to war with me?
Now that is not MIA. That is Liz Phair from her brand new unexpected album called Fun Style, which just like magically appeared out of nowhere on her website a week ago.
Don't you love the internet? Isn't the internet awesome?
I mean, nothing comes out without leaking first, but nobody seemed to know that this was... All right, Anne, is she tweaking MIA with the song Bollywood?
I think she's tweaking her. I don't know. I'm always maybe too big-hearted, but I was hoping it was also kind of a warning to Maya, like, look what happened to me, young lady.
Tell us what did happen to Liz Phair.
Okay, so Liz Phair made a record long, long ago in the great days of indie rock back in the 90s called Exile in Guyville. That record was a very raw, very powerful, articulate sort of account of being a woman in a male-dominated indie rock scene in Chicago. After that, Phair went on to make several other albums, which were increasingly more aimed at a more mainstream pop audience. It sort of culminated in what I think was her... Help me out. I think it was her third or maybe her fourth album, self-titled Liz Phair, which was co-written with the songwriting team, The Matrix, who had written a lot of songs with Avril Lavigne, who to a lot of indie people represented, you know, the nadir of fake punk.
Right.
And so here Liz Phair supposedly betrayed her audience. And ever since then, she's been responding to that accusation, and she's under the dark shadow of her audience's anger, frankly. I've never seen anyone quite as hated, I don't think, in this particular era as Liz Phair by her own fans.
So when Liz Phair dares to rap, Nyssa, as she does on that song, Bollywood, and let me hasten to say that's the only song on the record where she's rapping, but still... She's just standing there with a big bullseye on her back, basically.
Yeah, which I think
she knows it.
Yeah, that's part of what seems to be going on with this record. I mean, and in that sense, I mean, I love Liz Phair, and I think I'm sort of glad that she's doing this. It seems like she's sort of clearing certain decks opening herself up to certain things and just and doing what she wants to do, which is great. I don't know how many times I'm going to listen to it, but I think it's great that she does it, and I sort of, you know, wish her well with it.
Anne, a final word. What kind of advice or lesson could Liz Phair give to MIA?
Well, just make the music you want to make. Try not to get too caught up in what other people think of you, and recognize that there's a lot of haters out there, and keep your sense of humor. This is a funny record.
There is a lot of Dr. Demento-style humor in this
exactly.
record by Liz Phair. And Anne Powers has been with us on the line, the pop music critic from the Los Angeles Times. In the studio, Nisa Abubba, music writer, columnist for Pitchfork Media. Anne, Nisa, great to have the two of you back on Soundcheck. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much. Bye.
In a moment, soprano Angela Mead tells us about playing one of the most challenging title roles in all of opera. It's Bellini's Norma, and she'll perform Norma's most famous aria live in our studio next.